Happy Saturday, and thank you for joining me tonight. So we're going to begin tonight with McDonald's. Do you like McDonald's? If so, what is your favorite meal? I will tell you personally that my favorite meal for McDonald's would be for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Hands down, the bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddle. It's really, really good. It's super fantastic. But whatever your favorite meal may be, or if you don't even eat at McDonald's, unequivocally, McDonald's has been around for a while. Founded back in 1940, opening the first official restaurant in 1955 in San Bernardino, California, and later expanding their operations nationwide, soon becoming a household name here at home. Then they branched off, expanding their operations into other countries. By 1988, with nearly 10,000 restaurants worldwide, they came to Yugoslavia, then Hungary. And that was major because it was the first time that McDonald's was essentially in a Warsaw Pact country. So it would only be a matter of time before they inevitably got to Russia.
The rush of Russians into Moscow's new McDonald's this morning was so great that even the company's largest restaurant couldn't really offer fast food. McDonald's did offer distractions, like men who balance teapots on their heads. But Muscovites are well practiced in the art of patience. I didn't have to wait long, said Alosha. Only 1 hour. We line up for Lenin's tomb. We wait to see Russian heroes, said one customer. We can wait to see an American hero, too.
I think it's very tasty.
McDonald's invested 14 years and $50 million to turn this gray corner of Gorky Street into plastic fantastic Americana. They built their own factory with fry inspectors, bun supervisors, and guidelines on bun symmetry. And the Soviet waitresses were all sent to smiling school and given strict instructions.
We're serving those people one at a time, and we're saying, thank you, please come back again.
For the average Russian worker, a Big Mac takes a big bite, about half a day's pay. But no one seemed discouraged by the cost in time or money. After all, if you waited long enough today, you got more than a burger. You could see that teapot man start spinning a samovar on his head.
That was reporting from CBS News there in 1990, reporting from Moscow. The first McDonald's had just opened in Russia. This was obviously a huge deal. This was international news. This was after the Cold War and sort of brought a sense of normalcy and also a new beginning for Russians. It symbolized capitalism and also a gateway to the West. It meant more to the Russians than just food. I mean, this was a huge deal. One citizen describing it as a small Disneyland. In February of this year, Russia, of course, invaded the nation of Ukraine. This was their second invasion. The first invasion was in 2014. And McDonald's, they took a huge hit from that. Just 1 month later, McDonald's made this statement on their website. This was on March 8th this year. The headline reads, McDonald's to temporarily close restaurants and pause operations in Russia. Quote, the conflict in Ukraine and the humanitarian crisis in Europe has caused unspeakable suffering to innocent people. As a system, we join the world in condemning aggression and violence and praying for peace. Our number one priority for the staff from the start of this crisis has been and will remain our people. The company has provided immediate financial support to our team in Ukraine. End quote. This recent decision by McDonald's to cease all operations in Russia has caused them to close 850 locations, which accounts for 9% of their revenue. I will say one more thing on this front, though. Amid McDonald's deciding to get up and leave, Russia recently clapped back, and then they decided to essentially come back with this peculiar rebranded pseudo McDonald's style lookalike called Tasty, and that's it. I kid you not, that is their company name. Ironically, they are now facing French fry shortages. So, yeah, that's happening. McDonald's hasn't been the only one to do this, though. Since Russia has invaded Ukraine in February, of course, their economy has taken a hit in terms of geopolitical backlash and sanctions, but also just socially. More than 750 companies have scaled back their operations in Russia since the Ukrainian invasion. We are nearly 6 months into this invasion where Russia is showing no signs of letting up. Just 2 weeks ago, Russia launched missiles hitting a shopping mall in Ukraine, which killed 16 people, wounding 59 others. President Zelensky of Ukraine, who condemned the attack, said more than 1,000 people were in the mall at the time of the attack. According to a witness, a massive fire ensued, causing dark smoke to enter the atmosphere. Russia has long time denied targeting civilian infrastructure in Ukraine, but it just keeps happening. I mean, just last week, Russian rockets hit a five-story apartment complex, killing 15 people. 23 others, including a child, remain buried under the rubble. This room comes as the war in Ukraine has left thousands of innocent civilians dead. One stark and horrific example of that is in the Ukrainian city of Mariupol. Back in March, President Zelensky said Russia will be remembered for its war crimes as the fighting continued in Mariupol. This was reporting from the Financial Times back in March on the grim situation there. Quote, in the besieged city of Mariupol, scenes of the heaviest fighting in Russia's three-week war in Ukraine. People are so hungry that they are killing stray dogs for food. Dmitry, a businessman who left the city on Tuesday, said friends who told him they resorted to this desperate measure in the past few weeks, days after their supplies ran out. Quote, you hear the words, but it's impossible to really take them in, to believe that this is happening. It is hell on earth. Once one of Ukraine's most important ports, Mariupol is now a charnel house, a city of ghosts. For more than 2 weeks, it has now been subjected to a Russian bombardment of such intensity that it has turned whole neighborhoods into piles of smoldering rubble. Dmitry told the Times, quote, everything was burning. There were corpses everywhere, and I was just walking through, picking up a cabbage here and a carrot there, knowing it meant my family would live another day or two. You become completely desensitized. This is a father recounting bombs dropping. He said, quote, his abiding memory of the past 3 weeks was the feeling of utter powerlessness. Quote, when the bombs fell, I would routinely cover my son with my body, but I knew that I couldn't really protect him, that it was an act of desperation. End quote. With no gas, people were left cooking outside from makeshift campfires using broken furniture from their homes. Stories of people sheltering in one home, desperately thirsty, drained water from radiators, collecting snow and melting it. That same month, Russia bombed a maternity hospital where many died, including a mother who was giving birth. She and that child were killed in that attack. A Ukrainian citizen told CNN, quote, this is not war, this is extermination. In May, the city of Mariupol was officially in the hands of the Russians after a constant shelling, fighting, and destruction that left thousands of people dead. Two essential questions here are why Russia wanted this city so badly, and what does this mean now that it's in the hands of Russia? What does this mean long-term for Ukrainians? Well, NPR answered those questions. So the city of Mariupol is located between Crimea, which Russia illegally annexed back in 2014. Crimea is what Russia likes to call theirs by having their own little separatists there controlling that region, but it's really part of Ukraine. Rita Kaniv, an expert on the Russian military at Georgetown University, said, quote, Mariupol is right in between them. So taking Mariupol is part of the campaign in the south and the southeast to connect the Russian-held areas, essentially, end quote. So now with Mariupol in Russia's hands, they essentially have tied those two regions together, consolidating the bridge between Crimea, now controlling the entire north shore of the Sea of Azov. City officials have said that 80% of homes have been destroyed in the city. United Nations workers and other members from international organizations say that they've not been able to safely access the city. A Ukrainian citizen told NPR, quote, there was no water, no heating, no gas, anything. Under the shelling, we tried to prepare food on an open fire to eat at least once a day. We were all covered in dirt. When snow falls, people would collect it for drinking water and to wash their hands and dishes. End quote. It was just 4 months ago that Russian rockets destroyed a airport in Venestia. Just 2 days ago, they bombed a city right in the heart of Ukraine, which is Venestia once again. This is reporting from BBC News.
Russian forces have extended their reach into the very heart of Ukraine, bombing a city which is far from the eastern front line. At least 23 people, including children, were killed in a cruise missile attack. More than 60 were injured, needing hospital treatment. The president of Ukraine, President Zelensky, called it an open act of terrorism. Now, the attack took place in the city of Vinnytsia, and that is southwest of the capital, Kyiv, and a very long way from the focus of the fighting in that eastern region of the Donbass. The Russian Defense Ministry has consistently denied targeting civilians, despite all the evidence. Our correspondent Sarah Rainsford is in Vinnytsia. Her report does include some distressing detail.
A sunny morning in Vinnytsia suddenly turned pitch black. This was moments after the Russian missiles hit. The staggering wounded and those killed on the spot. It was a strike on the very heart of this city. There was an air raid siren, but this is central Ukraine, far from the fighting, so people ignored it. The blast was huge. And among the ruins, we found this, smeared with blood. The four-year-old it belongs to was killed. Her name was Lisa. Her mum filmed the little girl just an hour before the attack. They were on their way to see her speech therapist. Irina herself was badly injured. Today, in The Hague, Ukraine's prosecutor general called Russia's missile strike a war crime.
It was scary. People came running this way, covered in shrapnel injuries. So I ran in the other direction, because it was frightening.
A giant department store was destroyed, including a medical center, completely gutted on the ground floor. But it seems the Russians' target was opposite. This is called Officer's House, but it's a concert hall. We saw no sign of any military here.
It is really hard to see scenes like this and to think of how Russia talks about its precision missiles and its military targets. This wasn't a military target, and the force of the blast here was so huge that it wrapped that car around the base of this building. And this attack happened right in the middle of a beautiful morning here in Vinnytsia, when people would have been out and about and would have felt safe. But nowhere is safe in Ukraine anymore.
Not even people's houses. Alexander thinks he heard the missile before it struck below his balcony. With so many injured and killed, he tells me he feels lucky that only his windows were shattered.
I ducked like this, but then I thought, there's nowhere to run. It's too late. So I thought, whatever will be, will be.
The missile fragments are being collected. The investigation has begun. A process once unimaginable in Ukraine that's now terrifyingly familiar. Sarah Rainsford, BBC News, Vinnytsia.
Just harrowing reporting there from BBC News on the devastating humanitarian attack in Vinnytsia there. According to that reporter saying nowhere is safe in Ukraine, and one of the citizens saying whatever will be. Ukrainian officials say that that attack on civilians is part of a consistent pattern, as Russia just keeps denying this, saying that, no, we're not targeting civilians, we're actually targeting military structures. That is not true, because there is a consistent pattern of this. For instance, over 1,000 residential buildings have been eradicated in the city of Kharkiv. In the city of Mykolaiv, Russia has been bombing hospitals. The Washington Post reports, quote, mothers with newborn babies, a woman with a heart condition, and an elderly people who couldn't walk on their own hurriedly evacuated to the basement of a Mykolaiv hospital on Sunday night as the bombing thuns of artillery drew closer. I was reporting just a couple months ago, this coming as the president of Ukraine ramps up calls for investigating Russia for war crimes against what they are doing here. This is reporting from the New York Times. It reads here, quote, this comes as the president of Ukraine is ramping up attacks, calling for investigating Russia for war crimes here. This is reporting from the New York Times, quote, atrocities against civilians, thousands of casualties with the toll rising, millions of refugees, thriving cities besieged and reduced to rubble. Ukrainians continue to resist the Russian onslaught. Russian artillery, rockets, and missiles have rained on cities and villages across Donetsk, even as its ground forces have seemingly paused their advance in order to regroup and resupply before a widely expected push deeper into the province. Many of the strikes have hit civilian areas, including markets, universities, and apartment and office buildings, making death and injury a daily reality for those who have not fled the Russian onslaught. End quote. That was reporting from the New York Times just recently. CNN recently reported on something that we have been following closely. CNN broke this exclusively yesterday that Russians have visited Iran at least twice in the last month to examine weapons capable for drones, essentially. Now, we did get some reporting last week about this, the White House releasing that information, the White House making this information public, essentially revealing that, which is newly declassified U.S. intelligence reporting. This is the lead from that article from CNN, quote, "A Russian delegation has visited an airfield in central Iran at least twice in the last month to examine weapons-capable drones, according to National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan and satellite imagery obtained exclusively by CNN. Quote, "We have information that the Iranian government is preparing to provide Russia with several hundred UAVs, including weapons-capable UAVs. We assess an official Russian delegation recently received a showcase of Iranian attack-capable UAVs. We are releasing these images captured in June showing Iranian UAVs that the Russian government delegation saw that day. This suggests ongoing Russian interest in acquiring Iranian attack-capable UAVs there." So we're going to keep an eye on this story as it continues to develop here, because this obviously means an escalation in the war against Ukraine with Russia acquiring new weapons here. Russia, essentially, they said a couple of months ago that they would not use nuclear weapons unless faced with an existential threat. Really? Unless faced with an existential threat. I mean, they've already faced geopolitical backlash in terms of like sanctions and everything. They've already faced backlash at home with literally thousands of Russians protesting in the streets against this war. This war is so unpopular that Putin's own citizens do not support him here. Putin literally deceived his own public. But there is a way that this is still getting out in Russia that, yes, there is actually a war, guys. There is a war in Russia. There is a war that Russians have launched against the Ukrainians, and Ukrainians are the ones that are being attacked here. Russia's not doing this to go fight the Nazis. No, the Ukrainians are innocent. And we here are the bad ones. I mean, we've got literally reports of prisoners of war, Russian prisoners of war, crying, calling their moms back in Russia from Ukraine, saying that they didn't know this was going to happen. They did not know. They were deceived here. Young Russian citizens here. It was just a couple of months ago that Brittany Griner was arrested in Russia on drug charges, essentially being charged with having cannabis in her possession. Just recently, she pleaded guilty and she acknowledged that she was possessing, she had those drugs. She said that there was no criminal intent as those drugs were in her luggage. We now know today, according to reporting from NPR and what has been widely reported, just yesterday this news broke. Brittany Griner, she had a doctor's note for that cannabis use. Her lawyers have told the Russian court. This is the same Russian court where literally 1% are acquitted. 1% get to go free. I mean, Russia basically is saying, oh, US, if you want Brittany Griner back, give us our guy from there. We'll do a prisoner swap so you can get her back. Otherwise, she's facing up to 10 years in prison. How do you like that? So this is international pressure here. This is reporting from NPR on that breaking story from yesterday. Quote, "A lawyer for WNBA star Brittany Griner at her drug possession trial in Russia on Friday gave the court a U.S. doctor's letter recommending she use medical cannabis to treat pain. Griner, a two-time Olympic gold medalist and standout for the Phoenix Mercury, was arrested at Moscow's airport in February after customs officials said they found vape canisters containing cannabis oil in her luggage. She faces up to 10 years in prison if convicted on charges of transporting drugs." End quote. So we don't know what's that is going to do here in terms of any developments in her case on how that will affect the Russian court there. We can only hope for the best, as there's lots of calls for bringing her back home, including a standing ovation just last week at the WNBA Stars game. The war in Russia has been ongoing. Russia's war against Ukraine has been consistent and ongoing since February. We're going to have more reporting on this as it continues, but I mean, it's just absolutely devastating that this is still happening and that Ukrainian citizens are still losing their lives, thousands, recently in the city of Vinnytsia. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Whether you put down your phone to be there for your daughter, or pick up your phone to call a helpline for your roommate, when it comes to mental health, now more than ever, every action counts.
Welcome back. There is some breaking news here. According to a federal judge that has just recently ruled this in the state of Tennessee, U.S. agencies now must temporarily are barred from enforcing LGBTQ guidance. This is reporting from ABC News. Quote, a judge in Tennessee has temporarily barred two federal agencies from enforcing directives issued by President Joe Biden's administration that extended protections for LGBTQ people in schools and workplaces. U.S. District Judge Charles Atchley Jr. in an order on Friday ruled for the 20 states' attorney generals who sued last August, claiming that the Biden administration's directives infringed on states' rights to enact laws that, for example, prevent students from participating in sports based on their gender identity or requiring schools and businesses to provide bathrooms and showers to accommodate trans people. Pause. So this essentially now means that LGBTQ members may now legally be barred and essentially be not allowed to participate in certain sports. According, reportedly, transgender people may not be allowed to participate in same sports with their other peers, as well as going to bathrooms, going to certain bathrooms or using certain showers, essentially this accommodating transgender people. Actually, this federal judge, who was appointed by President Donald Trump in 2020, agreed with Attorney General's argument and issued a temporary injunction that prevents the agencies from applying that guidance on LGBTQ discrimination until the matter can be resolved by courts, end quote. So the state attorney generals where this essentially now goes into effect are the states of Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, South Dakota, Tennessee, and also the state of West Virginia. The directives regarding discrimination based on sexual orientation was issued by the United States Department of Education and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission in June, following a landmark civil rights decision by the U.S. Supreme Court in 2020, that under a provision called one of the titles, protects gay, lesbian, and transgender people from discrimination in the workplace. End quote. When the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade last month, when the court overturned Roe v. Wade, Justice Clarence Thomas, justice on the court, basically said that we should look at some of these other cases like same-sex marriage. And so perhaps, I mean, with this just recently happening, is the Supreme Court also going to overturn that? I mean, with Roe being overturned, he said we should look at some of these other cases as well that the Supreme Court perhaps wrongly settled. I mean, these are things that we are now having to look at now here in the United States. LGBTQ plus rights on the chopping block. I mean, as just this federal directive just came in saying that U.S. agencies are now temporarily barred from enforcing this new LGBTQ guidance that the Biden administration has put into effect. This federal judge in Tennessee making this order, barring these two federal agencies from enforcing that new guidance. What exactly does this mean in terms of like discrimination in schools and also in the workplace on gender identity? I mean, this has been a constant, consistent has had a profound mental health impact on the LGBTQ plus community here. as they've continued to face insults and hurls and assaults for this. Once again, just absolutely harrowing breaking news here. We're going to continue to follow this story as the story has just broken live. Stay with us here on the Jeremiah Patterson Show. There's more ahead.
I love my new home. I always wanted a house with historic architecture, but it might be too Victorian.
Hey, gosh, interesting hemline on those pants.
Yes, I do believe they're called pants.
Pardon me.
No,
pardon me.
At least Geico makes bundling my home and car insurance easy. I save so much.
I have come to call upon you.
Just text me. Well, I'm heading up.
It's a ghost.
For bundling made easy, go to geico.com.
It's called self-care.
Welcome back. So we have two more stories here tonight, but I just want to provide some extra commentary on that breaking news that we just had just now. There is likely going to be an appeals to this new case that has to this new order by this federal judge in Tennessee. Are we going to see an appeal that essentially ascends to the U.S. Supreme Court, and where the conservative majority essentially looks at this and there is an overturning of rights? What exactly is going to happen here? I mean, these are live questions as we are faced with uncertainty and almost essentially some horrific certainty of what's going to happen here. So we're going to keep an eye on that story. And what has been highly criticized in a highly controversial meeting with the Prince of Saudi Arabia, President Joe Biden, just went to go visit him in that country where they discussed, among things, which is gas and also oil. This is reporting here.
President Biden's high-stakes visit to Saudi Arabia and the fist bump with the Crown Prince today that led to immediate outrage from many. The president hoping to bring down oil and gas prices here at home and to help bring stability to the Middle East. But after Biden promised to treat the kingdom as a pariah state for the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, many questions about this visit and now that fist bump seen around the world. The president arriving directly from Israel after Saudi Arabia made an historic announcement opening its airspace to all civilian air carriers, including Israel, a key step toward normalization between the two Mideast nations. And then arriving at the palace, that public greeting with the Crown Prince and then the fist bump seen by all of those cameras. A group meeting with the Crown Prince and his ministers, the working session lasting about 2 hours. And at a briefing afterward, President Biden heralded all that they accomplished on peace, technology, and energy, he said. And the president said at the very top of their meeting he did bring up Khashoggi's murder. A murder U.S. intelligence believes the Crown Prince was responsible for. How the president answered those questions today, senior White House correspondent Mary Bruce leading us off, traveling with the president in Saudi Arabia.
It's the image the Saudis were hoping for, but back in the U.S., it's drawing outrage. President Biden fist bumping Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the man the U.S. concluded ordered the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. As a candidate, Biden vowed to make Saudi Arabia pay the price and turn them into a global pariah. Today, the Saudis eager to release this picture of a warm greeting. The Crown Prince then hosting Biden and regional leaders.
Thank you, guys. President Biden, is Saudi Arabia still here, guys?
Afterwards, Biden telling reporters he did bring up Khashoggi at the very top of the meeting.
I was straightforward and direct in discussing it. I made my view crystal clear. I said very straightforwardly, for an American president to be silent on an issue of human rights, is this inconsistent with who we are and who I am?
Biden then asked how the Crown Prince responded.
He basically said that he was not personally responsible for it. I indicated I thought he was.
Khashoggi's employer, The Washington Post, calling that fist bump shameful, saying it gave the Crown Prince the redemption he has been desperately seeking.
You're coming under a lot of fire for your fist bump with the Crown Prince. What?
But Biden's tone grew serious when he was asked about Khashoggi's fiance, who today tweeted that the blood of MBS's next victim is on your hands.
I'm sorry she feels that way. I was straightforward back then. I was straightforward today.
Biden argued the trip was worth it, saying the Saudis will help lower gas prices in the U.S.
And I'm doing all I can to increase the supply for the United States of America, which I expect to happen.
He says Americans will start to feel that impact at the pump in the coming weeks. And he cited security gains in the region. Saudi Arabia today announcing it's opening its airspace to Israeli flights, an easing of relations.
That is a big deal.
Mary Bruce with us tonight, live from Saudi Arabia. And Mary, the president obviously aware of what he said in the past on the campaign trail, that he would make Saudi Arabia a pariah, the kingdom a pariah. Now he's there in Saudi Arabia. Of course, the fist bump that you pointed out there, the meeting with the crown prince. And we know what the president wants here. He said it right there in your report. He wants to bring down gas prices here at home. This was obviously a calculation made by the White House.
And David, the president knew he would face this condemnation. This was a risk he was willing to take. For the president, it was worth it to try in part to bring Americans some relief. But even if the Saudis are able to up the flow of oil, it's not clear how much relief that could provide to Americans back home. What is clear tonight, David, this visit, those images, it is exactly what the Saudis wanted. David.
Mary Bruce traveling with the president on this visit to the Middle East. Mary, thank you again tonight.
Back in 2018, we reported here extensively on this show on the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. We were consistent and extensively reporting on that. I mean, and to just have this happen with the president of the United States, Joe Biden, fist bumping, literally fist bumping the murderer here. I mean, what U.S. intelligence has concluded is the guy who is responsible for murdering Jamal Khashoggi. I mean, absolutely just shambolic. It's absolutely repulsive here. I mean, here on the show, I try my best to steer clear of my own opinions getting out there. I mean, but this is one of those moments where you have to, I mean, shame the administration. I mean, what has just happened here is absolutely egregious. It is absolutely counter to what we stand for as a country in terms of human rights. I mean, you literally said on the campaign trail that we're going to make Saudi Arabia the pariah that it is. We are going to make them pay for it. But you just fist-bumped the guy who murdered our journalist. The Washington Post putting out that statement, calling this meeting shameful. I mean, what's going on? What's going on here? I mean, this is absolutely enraging. It makes my blood boil that I have to report on this. But this just happened. I mean, is it really worth bringing gas prices in the United States down? Is it really worth selling out our moral compass as a nation? And our standing on the international stage, is it really worth that just to bring gas prices down? I'm sure we can handle gas prices. That was just absolutely outrageous. We'll be right back.
Introducing Tide Power Pods.
With Cat and Nat. I love how much I can stuff into these machines. But that is such a large load. Don't the stains sneak through?
Please. New Tide Power Pods can clean that whole situation.
You just toss it in before the close.
It's like two regular Tide Pods and then some power and then even more power.
With 50% more cleaning power, even your large load got clean.
How many kids do you have?
Girl, I lost track. There's a lot of kids. And then there's a husband. And then there's me.
That's a lot of clothes.
So the anniversary of this show is just 3 days away. On July 19th, we'll be celebrating 4 years here, of course, on the Jeremiah Patterson Show. Ahead of the anniversary, you notice that episodes are getting shorter and shorter, just a little bit ahead of essentially the production here. Pre-production is getting shorter because post-production, we are working on that anniversary episode, and I hope that you will join us for that. Thank you again for listening to this episode. Have a great day. Remember to stay positive and inspired, and I'll see you tomorrow.